Jenny tapped the first one, Blue Moon. Flip it over. Restlessly, Gibson flipped it on the table. Thanks for everything. Gibson sank back down in his chair like his knees had gone weak. He looked pale. Jonah picked up the card and studied it.
The postmark is a week after she went missing.
Are you saying these postcards are all from Callie Kendall? I asked, my curiosity getting the better of me, rendering me unable to stay quiet. This was a family matter, but I'd been drawn into it, or I'd drawn myself into it. Gibson flipped every card over carefully.
That's her handwriting, he said hoarsely.
I skimmed over them quickly. They were all postmarked about a year apart. The more recent ones included innocuous song lyrics. The last card had been mailed 13 months ago, to Jonah's mother. If she sent these cards, I said, there's no way those remains are hers.
And if they aren't hers, who do they belong to?
Jonah asked.
And why does someone want everyone to believe it's Callie?
Question. Bootleg Springs is famous for the disappearance of Callie Kendall. What is your theory? Misty Lynn Prosser.
Why's everyone always going on and on about that girl? So she disappeared, big deal. She didn't even live here. Personally, I couldn't give two shits about what happened. Maybe she up and got herself murdered and dumped in the lake. Maybe she met a boy and ran away and got herself murdered and dumped in a different lake.
47. Jonah. Out of all the Bodines, I'd been the least affected by the Callie Kendall investigation and our father's involvement. I hadn't grown up here, hadn't known Callie or experienced the horror of her disappearance, hadn't been raised by the man that many now considered to be a murderer. But with my mother's revelation, my head was spinning. Gibson looked like he'd just seen a ghost. I picked up the postcards again, examining them as if they held the answers. "I can't believe you never told me," I said to my mother. Mom winced. "Subjects pertaining to your father were a sore subject for you," she said diplomatically. "And if his suspicions were correct and Judge Kendall had anything to do with Callie's injuries, then that man is dangerous. Your father made me swear never to tell anyone. He didn't want anyone else becoming a target." Shelby was watching Gibson closely, drumming her fingers against her lips, her tell for deep thought. My brother's words echoed in my ears. That's her handwriting. There was more to the story, a lot more, I was sure of it. But right now, there was an immediate danger to be dealt with. "I gotta be honest, this is a lot to process," I said to the room in general. Shelby nodded, still staring at Gibson. I knew she'd zeroed in on his comment as well.
"You knew this whole time?" he asked my mom quietly.
"Yes, but it wasn't my story to tell. I don't tell stories that aren't mine," she said carefully, as if she were delivering a message in code. "Jonah, can I see you in the kitchen for a minute?" Shelby said suddenly.
Sure. I followed her out of the dining room and into the kitchen. She turned to face me, arms crossed over her chest.
"Are you okay?"
"I'm fine," I said, not quite sure if I meant it or not. My mother had been keeping a secret so big it now involved dead bodies, and she'd kept it for over a decade.
"This is a lot of information," she pressed. I ran my hand through my hair. I could hear Gibson and my mother speaking in the dining room. He had questions, we all would, and I had one too.
"How did he recognize her handwriting?" I asked quietly. Shelby bit her lip.
"I was wondering that myself," she confessed.
Things are going to get crazy, I told her. She nodded. But I'm here for you, whatever you and your mom and the Bodines need. I pulled her into my arms. Thank you for being so good to my family. In a town this small, there aren't many degrees of separation between your family and my family. Still, I said, tilting her chin up. Thank you. I kissed her softly. So, who do we tell? I asked. Everyone around the table was silent. Billy Ray burped under the table, then barked in delight. We have to go to the authorities, Shelby said. They need to know that that body isn't Callie Kendall, that some other family lost a daughter, a sister. Bowie and Cassidy are getting married tomorrow, I reminded her. Your triathlon is tomorrow. I realize that, but if this is all connected, if whoever threatened Cece Benefiel into retracting her claim was involved in Abby Gilbert's death, if the same person is responsible for that car nearly forcing you off the road on your bike, I added. If one person did all that, they're also likely the person who hurt Callie in the first place, and they're powerful enough to change a forensics report, Shelby said. Her statement hung like a cloud over the table. This is bullshit. We know it's the judge, Gibson said, slapping a hand on the table. The puppy barked ferociously at the noise. Gibbs had accepted my mother's story as the truth, which told me he either trusted her or he needed Callie Kendall to be alive. Maybe it was a bit of both. Sorry, bud, he said, leaning down to pick up Billy Ray. Despite the anger in his tone, he held the dog gently. The evidence points in that direction, Shelby began. But we can't be certain. If we start making accusations...
Fuck accusations, Gibson said. I want a face-to-face conversation with that asshole.
Billy Ray took exception to the language and slathered Gibson's face with his tongue.
Get your damn tongue out of my mouth, he sputtered.
The mood around the table lightened almost imperceptibly.
This is exactly why we shouldn't tell Scarlett, Shelby pointed out. Half-cocked accusations aren't going to get us a confession, and if it is the judge, he obviously has power and reach. He has access to police records, maybe even a thug or two in his pocket to do his dirty work.
Gibson handed the puppy over to my mother, who still looked guilty and dazed. She and I were going to have a long talk in the near future.
Why didn't you tell Jonah when he came here? Shelby asked. It was like the woman could read my mind. Everyone was safer assuming Callie Kendall was gone, Mom said.
She seemed lighter, too, as if sharing this news had somehow lessened a weight she'd been carrying for a long time. Maybe everyone is still safer assuming she's dead, I pointed out.
What's that supposed to mean? Gibson demanded.
Our brother is getting married tomorrow. Do we really want to have a family sit down and ruin that? Who's going to be paying attention to two people who waited their entire lives for 6 o'clock tomorrow when the whole world is lit up over Callie Kendall being alive?
Still, it would be nice if she could go unmissing to clear this mess up,
Shelby mused.
Call her, Gibson said earnestly to my mom. Bring her back here.
I can't do that, Gibbs. It was one-way communication. Everything was set up for her safety. I don't know where she is or how to contact her. After your mother died, Callie and your father spoke on the phone. They decided that she would continue sending postcards, but to me instead of here, where someone might notice them and wonder. Who would see a postcard and find it suspicious enough to raise a red flag?
Shelby asked.
Seriously, Shelby, how long have you been in bootleg?
Gibson asked dryly. It was the first hint of humor I'd seen from him in a long time. She gave him a little mock bow.
Point taken. The bottom line is, what if the postcards aren't enough proof?
She said, wetting her lips.
If someone has the power to tamper with a forensics report, they're not going to have much of a problem disproving a couple of postcards that could have been sent by anybody. Without Callie herself, we've still got nothing.
You have me, Mom said firmly.
Your father's name needs to be cleared. I'll tell them everything I know.
It's still... what would Jamie call it? I asked. Hearsay? So you got postcards in the mail. What are they going to do? Fingerprint them?
Maybe. And there's also the fact that I met her last year.
Mom, are you fucking kidding me?
Holy shit,
Shelby breathed. Holy shit, Disney princess swore, Gibson whispered.
Watch your mouth, Jonah. And no, I'm not fucking kidding you,
Mom said with a slight smile.
When your father died last year, Callie called me. We met in Seattle for lunch. What did she say? How did she look? Could you tell it was her?
Shelby was hinged so far forward, her chin was almost on the table. I stroked a hand over her back, feeling unusually calm. I assumed a complete and total breakdown was in my near future, and decided to embrace the calm while it lasted.
She'd heard your father passed away. With both your parents gone, she felt her debt to them to make sure they knew she was safe had been fulfilled. That's why the postcards stopped.
So we tell the sheriff, I pressed. Tomorrow, after the wedding, Gibson decided. Okay, I said. We were all silent for another minute before Gibson spoke again. She's really alive? The hope in his voice made me hurt for him.
Mom nodded. She's alive, and your father saved her life.
Why would she have stayed away this whole time? Gibson wondered aloud, his face broody.
Only Callie could answer that, Mom said.
Billy Ray tore into the dining room, dragging one of my running shoes by the laces. It got wrapped around the table leg, and the puppy stubbornly tried to tug it free. We watched him, all a little dazed.
You know, I thought it would feel good to finally have some answers,
Shelby said.
Now I just have more questions.
Join the fucking club, Gibson said, pushing away his untouched whiskey.
48. Shelby. The toe I dipped into Cheat Lake was considering frostbite. I'd done the majority of my training in Bootleg's lovely heated waters, so normal lake temperatures were cold enough to take my breath away, even in the swelter of the first Saturday in August. I was standing in the back of the pack of bathing-suited athletes with race numbers written on their arms and legs, feeling like there were few places on earth that I belonged less than right here. Everyone else looked leanly muscled, icily calm, like they did this every Saturday on this sliver of beach surrounded by thick trees that sang with cicadas. According to my fitness watch, my heart was attempting to explode its way out of my chest. I felt alone. Lonely. It wasn't true, of course. I'd been chauffeured here in Estelle's minivan with the breakfast club, my bike on the roof, my gear behind Gert and Jefferson in the back bench seat. The odds of me being attacked 50 miles from Bootleg Springs in a crowd of triathletes and spectators were low enough that Jonah had settled for me having a geriatric team of babysitters. They were waiting for me at the transition point between the swim and the bike. To make sure you didn't drown, Mert had offered helpfully. Once I returned to start the run, they would drive to the finish line to meet me there. I wished Jonah could have been here, but I'd been the first person to tell him he absolutely had to focus on the wedding today. Bowie was the first brother to tie the knot. This was big, huge, much bigger than my personal quest to compete, to complete. Still, I missed him fiercely.
But I'd started this process by myself to prove to myself that I could do it myself. And I would. Last night, I'd reached another milestone. I'd finished my dissertation. Of course, there was a need for another pass at polishing, for perfecting, but the hard work, the bleeding, was over. Just like now. I'd trained, I'd sweated, I'd bled, I'd ached. And all that was between me and that finish line was a 750-meter swim and 15.6 miles divided between bike and my own feet. The hard part was over. This was the fun part. I hoped. Best of all, there was no crazy potential murderer here watching me. It was just me and the culmination of my hard work, and I was going to enjoy it.
First try?
A man in a very small bathing suit with a rather large belly asked, wiping his nose on the back of his hand. I nodded. Yeah, does it show? He leaned in conspiratorially.
You look as nervous as I feel. Hey, Tamika!
He waved over a woman in a sleek blue one-piece. She had silver curls peeking out of her swim cap.
Found us another virgin.
Her face transformed into a smile. Welcome to the club, honey. Thanks, I said. You're both first-timers, too?
Yep,
the man said.
I'm Gus. I lost 50 pounds this year. Figured I'd put all this energy to good use. Grandkids are waiting for me at the finish, so I gotta finish. This here's Tamika.
Tamika gave me a wave. I'm here because I bet my twin sister $500 I could finish faster than her. She's running her first try today in Michigan. We quit smoking together in January.
What's your story, Pipsqueak?
Gus asked, giving me a hard punch in the arm.
Sorry about that. Nerves screw with my depth perception.
I'm Shelby, and... I paused, considering my options. I was diagnosed with a weird kind of arthritis that causes me a lot of pain and might turn my upper back into a question mark. And I thought if I could finish a triathlon, I could probably handle the diagnosis. Cool, Tamika said with a grin.
You don't look questionable to me, huh?
Gus said, moving to elbow me. I took a step back to be safe. Are you some super fast athlete? Tamika wondered. Me? My eyes widened. No, I'm just hoping to finish.
We're all gonna finish,
Gus insisted. Tamika jerked a thumb at him. What he said. Want to stick with us? Moral support? I instantly felt better. The organizers ran us through everything one more time. We'd enter the water and swim parallel to the shore, following the buoys until they brought us back on shore. There were lifeguards in the water and medical boats already on the water, just in case. Please don't let me need a boat, I whispered as we moved closer to the starting line on the beach. Bodies pressing in, energy rising. Event photographers snapped away. Gus took my left hand. I took Tamika's. And when the starting gun fired, we trotted forward as a team. The water was cold enough to take my breath away, but once I had room, I ducked under the surface. Reinvigorated, awake, alive, I reached for the surface. I broke into the light and air, found Gus and Tamika waiting for me. With a laugh, I kicked my legs and we started swimming. The main crush of bodies was ahead of us, but the water was churning all around us in their wake. Nerves shifted to excitement now that we were moving. Gus had a slower stroke, but I paced him. Conserving energy now was exactly what I should be doing. I kept my new friends in sight and focused on strong, deep breaths, certain that Jonah would be proud. We clipped past buoy after buoy. My arms felt strong. My strokes, textbook perfect. I wished Jonah could see me, see his hard work pay off. I was so focused on form that I was startled when my fingers scraped bottom. Let's go, Shelby, Tamika called from a few feet away in knee-deep water. The swim was over, and we weren't even dead last. I felt elated as the three of us slogged out of the water.
Meet up on the road, girls,
Gus called as he jogged toward the parking lot where the bikes waited.
I stripped off my goggles and swim cap, like Jonah told me, and trotted up the beach in the direction of the transition area. I dipped my feet in one of the kiddie pools closest to my setup and then ran for my bike. I pulled on a pair of shorts over my bathing suit bottoms, prayed my soggy ass wouldn't chafe, and sat to pull on my cycling shoes. My adrenaline was ramping up again. I bobbled my helmet when I reached for it. My sunglasses went flying, and I had to scramble for both. Relax. Focus. Don't go for speed. Be consistent. I heard Jonah's words as clear as if he were standing behind me. They steadied my hands. Pushing myself too hard would send my body into a tailspin. I slowed my movements intentionally. I made sure my running shoes and hat were on the towel with the race number belt. I grabbed a quick swig of water, and I was on my way. I plucked my bike off the rail and pushed it toward the start. Gus was already there. Tamika was 10 seconds behind me. We mounted up together and pushed off. Yee-haw! Gus hollered. 49. Shelby. Gus's event was clearly the bike. I watched his 60-year-old butt bob in front of me as he powered up the long, rolling hill. Tamika was a bike length ahead of me on the right. My legs burned. My lungs burned. Sweat sluiced down my back, leaving me sticky and salty. "Can you believe this is how we chose to spend a Saturday?" Tamika called over her shoulder. I grinned. Yeah, I could believe it. We were in the middle of the back of the pack, surrounded by the non-elite athletes, the real people, the regular people who had something to prove, not a time to beat. We were sweating and suffering together, and something about that bonded us together as we pedaled our way through hills and turns, trees flashing past us. The stingiest of summer breezes enhanced by our speed. I thought again of Bootleg Springs in my survey. Bonds. Roots. I was going to remember this hill, Gus's butt, Tamika's sharp laugh, for the rest of my life, because we were bound together now. The Bodines were tied to Bootleg, not just because of the history of the generations that came before them, but because of how the town witnessed their pain and arranged itself within it. I imagined the casseroles that would have lined the Bodine fridge and freezer when Connie died, the turnout for Jonah Sr.'s funeral. I'd seen firsthand the gossip stir about Jonah Bodine's involvement in the Callie Kendall disappearance. It was a small town. Gossiping was a professional sport. However, so was compassion. And as often as a "May he rest in peace" was raised up in atonement for gossiping about the man, there were many more instances of the town stepping up to claim the surviving Bodines as their own. They hired Scarlett for handiwork, proudly oohed and awed over Jameson's metalwork when his installations made the news. They pushed new clients at Gibson and praised Bowie for his work with the students at the high school. They took their legal issues to Devlin. They sweated with Jonah in the gym or in the park, trusting him to guide their health, their bodies, to a better future. And though they discussed it to death, the town never once seemed to hold Jonah Sr.'s misdeeds against his children. Love wasn't just being there in the good times. Real love was standing next to someone on their darkest days. Real love was sweating together, striving together, falling down and getting back up, hurting, healing. That's where the bond came from. The work. I felt a new burst of energy wash over me and crested the hill with a big fat smile on my face. The miles were ticking by and I didn't want to miss a single one of them. I didn't want to miss out on anything anymore. Yes, I was a researcher at heart, but that didn't mean I couldn't get out from behind my data and live. Love. Jonah. I almost fell off my bike. I loved Jonah Bodine. This was no summer fling. This was no temporary stopover before I got on with the rest of my life. This was my life. Well, I'll be damned, I wheezed. I felt free, lighter than I had in years, happy.
Almost there, Gus puffed over his shoulder in glee as we spotted the transition area a few hundred yards ahead of us.
Oh my God, what is that? Tamika gasped beside me. On the side of the road, six elderly bootleggers hooted and hollered from lawn chairs at racers as they passed. And why aren't they wearing shirts? Tamika asked. Because they'd painted S-H-E-L-B-Y on their bellies. My neighbors, my friends, proudly displayed their painted torsos. The horror, the hilarity. Now I was certain I wouldn't forget today. These memories would be etched into my mind like the blue paint on the sweet, wrinkled skin of my fan club.
Shelby, you're not in last place, Jefferson hollered.
Great job, Shelby. You don't look like you're gonna vomit,
Mert bellowed. She was wearing an umbrella hat to keep the August sun off her face. I waved, careful not to veer into the ditch.
We're real proud of you,
Gert said, hefting a jar of what looked like apple pie moonshine.
Thank you,
I laughed as I zipped past. What was that? Tamika asked, still in disbelief.
Or am I dehydrated and hallucinating mirages? You wish. That's my fan club, I told her.
We reached the transition area and high-fived Gus on our way back to our spots. Only 3.1 miles were left in my personal challenge, and I was actually looking forward to them. I hopped off my bike and nearly face-planted when my knees tried to give out. It was either love or exertion that was taking my legs out from under me. I decided it was love. I was in love. And I finished my dissertation. And I had a degenerative disease. And I was really, really tired and might have to crawl my way across the finish line. That was life. The good, the bad, the ugly, all mixed together in a special kind of recipe of possibility. Gratefully, I sank to the ground and swapped out my cycling shoes for my running shoes. I guzzled more water and wished for dino nuggets while I snarfed down a packet of gross energy gel crap for some calories. My body was so tired. It was tempting to just lay down here on my towel next to my bike. But that's not why I was here. I could nap tomorrow and eat all the dino nuggets I wanted. Jonah promised. For now, I needed to get up and push for another 30 or 40 minutes. That was it. I'd done worse things for longer. Heck, I'd been stabbed. I could freaking finish this race. Using the seat of my bike, I pulled myself back up to standing. I lumbered my way back to the start. My legs felt like overcooked spaghetti.
The run's my worst, Gus said, appearing next to me. If you need to leave me out there to finish, you do it.
Not happening, Gus, my man, Tamika said, between hits from her water bottle. Let's do this, I said, putting my hand out.
3.1 miles is the only thing that stands between us and grandkid hugs and $500 and all the dino nuggets I can eat. Their hands joined mine.
Let's do this, Gus wheezed.
I want that money, Tamika huffed. I want those nuggets.
We started off slowly, and I tried to focus on form. It deteriorated when I was tired, and I was so freaking tired. My legs felt like blobby gelatin in an earthquake. I added Jell-O to the list of things I was going to eat tomorrow. I should have chosen to prove a point with just a 5K, or maybe a nice hike. Then I remembered bears. I glanced around at the scenery. We were on a country road, but the woods were thin enough that I felt confident I could see a large mammal coming at me. West Virginia really was beautiful. The trees were lush and green. Fields and hills rolled off in all directions in more greens and yellows and browns. This part of the road was flanked by a tidy split rail fence. I steadied my breath and focused on the rhythm of my foot strikes. "First mile is the worst," I whispered to myself. I wished Jonah was here, urging me on, squirting water on me, telling me I could do this.
"I don't know if I can do this," Tamika said through gritted teeth.
"You are absolutely doing this," I told her, glancing down at my watch. $500 in exactly 2 miles. 1 mile down. The worst mile. Gus was wheezing on my left. He didn't have the oxygen to spare to complain, so I did it for him. "It's so hot, like convection oven broiling a steak hot. Like coal-fired pizza oven hot," Tamika gasped out. I added pizza to my Sunday meal list. Gus grunted. I was sweating so much I felt like I might dehydrate into a raisin. But my legs kept moving. We all kept going forward. Things were starting to hurt. My shins, my heels, my arches. I could tell I was going to have bra burn from the amount of salt exploding from my pores. But my breath was still there. My feet were still moving. The crowd around us had thinned. Some pulling ahead in the run, others slowing to walk. The August sun beat down on us, bouncing back off the asphalt of the road. I thought about what I wanted after this. Thought about calling Jonah from the finish line with my medal. Thought about calling my parents. I'd tell them. I could tell them now, because I'd done this. We paused at a water station, rehydrating and rinsing the sweat from our faces and necks. "How much farther?" Tamika asked. Gus was still too winded to speak.
1 mile to go," the attendant said cheerfully.
We pushed off again without discussing it. 1 mile, I repeated it to myself, chanted it. There'd been a time just a few short months ago when a mile hadn't been possible. When I'd battled pain just from existing, now I had 1 mile left to go, and I was going to finish. The hair on my arms rose. I hoped it was determination and not a symptom of heat exhaustion.
1 mile, guys, I barked. We're finishing this.
It was the longest mile of my life. That ribbon of road seemed to stretch on indefinitely, and I wondered if maybe I'd stumbled into some strange corner of hell where the race never ended, the torture was never over. Then I heard cheering.
"There, over the hill,"
Tamika hissed. Gus, the workhorse, hadn't lifted his gaze from his sneaker since mile two.
"Just lead me in the right direction," he puffed without looking up.
The hill, the longest, tallest hill in the history of West Virginia geography, gave way to the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. The finish line. The route was lined with spectators and athletes who'd finished ages ago. I wanted to hate them, but I didn't have the energy.
"It's all downhill from here," I wheezed.
"Let's do this," Gus said.
"I'm definitely puking," Tamika confirmed. "Do it after the finish line."
Together, we took the decline. The cheers, the flutter of the finish line sign drew us in like a siren song.
It was really happening. I was finishing an entire triathlon with a disease. I couldn't tell the difference between sweat and tears. Judging from the wet snorts coming from my compatriots, they were experiencing the same sense of overwhelm. The cheers were deafening. I felt them in my blood and bones. Community. Connection.
"Let's do this, ladies,"
Gus said, his voice cracking. Together, we linked hands and, sobbing and sweating, made our way across the finish line. I did it. The heartbeat that hammered in my head said it over and over again. I did it. There was more cheering. Gus was dragged away by a horde of toddlers chanting, "Grandpa!" Tamika was bent at the waist over a trash can, laughing. And Jonah was here, in a suit and tie, holding the biggest bouquet of flowers I'd ever seen, and a piece of pizza. He was here, for me.
with pizza. These were tears.
He pushed his way through, the crowd parting around him, and I was running again. He tossed the flowers over his shoulder and caught me mid-leap.
You did it, Shelby! You fucking did it!
He shouted over the noise. His joy was palpable. I could reach out and hold on to his happiness for me.
I'm so fucking proud of you!
I threw my arms around his neck.
I did it!
I confirmed with an undignified sob.
And I'm in love with you.
Question. What's one thing you wish your neighbors would recognize about you? Scarlett Bodine.
That I'm a damn genius when it comes to pairing folks up. If people would just stop sticking to their guns and acting like they know best, I could wrap up my goal of romantic matchmaking domination a hell of a lot faster.
50. Shelby. I wasn't sure if I'd said it loud enough for him to catch the words over the roar of the crowd. Runners were finishing around us, spectators were cheering, and I'd just shouted my declaration of love in the middle of it. He lowered me slowly, gently, to the ground, and I was grateful when my legs didn't give out.
"What did you say?"
he asked in a half shout. I was getting his suit sweaty, but he didn't seem to notice. I looked him in the eye, squared my shoulders, and delivered the message again.
I love you, Jonah Bodine.
Something flickered in those sharp green eyes.
I finished my dissertation last night and the triathlon 5 seconds ago. Summer's coming to an end, but I'm hoping this is just the beginning for us.
He opened his mouth, but I shut him up with a hard, sweaty kiss.
I sprang this on you, and I'm not expecting an answer. Figure out how you feel and let me know when you're ready.
You're a hell of a girl, Shelby, he said softly.
I am, aren't I? I agreed with a grin that I felt in my soul.
Now give me that pizza.
He handed it over with a grin. Then someone else was calling my name.
Shelby! Mom? Dad?
I blinked as my parents wound their way to us.
What are you doing here?
Dad snatched me out of Jonah's grasp and squeezed me tight.
We are so proud of you, Shelby.
He had his GT touchdown face on. Only this time it was for me. And I was sweating and crying again.
We saw you come across the finish line, and I swear it gave me goosebumps, Mom said, leaning in for her hug and kiss.
I can't believe you're here, I said, my voice breaking.
My parents shared a baffled look.
Why wouldn't we be here? Dad asked, looking confused.
It's just a sprint try, I said.
It's your sprint try, Mom insisted. And it's a huge deal, Shelby.
It was a huge deal. They didn't even know how huge a deal it was. It made me want to cry, or keep crying. At this point, between the sweat and the tears, my face was a salt mine. Everything was gritty, and I wasn't sure where the moisture was coming from. I thought I'd do this alone. I'd finish alone. But I'd never been alone in the first place.
You guys, I'm in love with Jonah, I announced. And I finished my dissertation finally last night, and I don't want to find a home for Billy Ray. I want to keep him. Also, I was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis earlier this year, but it's going to be okay because I just finished a triathlon, so I can pretty much do anything.
My parents shared another one of those baffled looks.
I'm not really sure where we should start with that, Dad admitted.
I pulled him down for a hug.
Everything is going to be great.
Shelby, let's get a picture.
Gus and Tamika, re-energized by sports drinks, bananas, and familial accolades, pushed their way into our little circle. Introductions were made, photos were taken, pizza eaten, and I finally got my hands on a finisher's medal. It hung around my neck with a significant weight. And while all of that was going on, Jonah's quiet gaze never left me.
steady, secure, proud, amused. All things I loved about him. I grinned and winked at him. I'd proved to myself everything I'd set out to prove, and now the real fun could begin. Yes! Tamika fist pumped her phone in the air. I beat my sister by a whole 2 minutes. There she is! The Breakfast Club, thankfully fully clothed now, pushed their way through the finish line crowd. More introductions were made, and I felt thoroughly surrounded by love.
So, what's with the suit? Gus asked Jonah. You proposing?
I laughed as my parents went back to looking dazed. He's in his brother's wedding today, but he surprised me here, I explained. Mom's eyes went misty. What time is it? I demanded. Dad read off the time from his watch. We need to get you to a wedding, I exclaimed.
What about your bike? The rest of your stuff? Jonah asked.
You go, I insisted. I've got plenty of help. Go. Still, he paused. He had things to say, but I had time to hear them. I rose on tiptoe and pressed a kiss to his clean-shaven cheek. We'll talk later. I'm good. I'll see you at the wedding. He stared down at me, a slow grin spreading across his face.
I'll see you there.
He kissed me on the mouth for a few NC-17 seconds before pulling back.
See you all later, he said.
Jonah blew me a kiss as he backed away.
That boy is head over heels for you, Granny Louisa sighed.
That would be awfully convenient, I said, watching the suited shoulders of Jonah Bodine disappear into the crowd.
So, honey, back to this ankle-losing thing, Mom said, trying to draw my attention back.
While the Breakfast Club hauled my gear back to Bootleg Springs, I sprawled out in the back seat of my mom's sedan and answered all their questions about my diagnosis. Mom did an internet search on her phone while Dad drove, and I spent the last 15 minutes of the drive talking her down.
Never do an internet search on a diagnosis, Mom. You know these things.
She was staring in horror at a worst-case scenario image search. Dad swerved, trying to peer at the phone screen.
You guys! This isn't terminal, but smashing through a guardrail might be. Can we please focus on the fact that I have this under control, and I'll let you know if there's a reason to worry?
I can't tell if you're Pollyanna-ing us again, Dad griped.
Pollyanna-ing you? I asked.
Oh, I'm fine, guys. Just a little mishap at work with a very small knife. It's hardly a scratch, Dad said in a falsetto.
Come on, I didn't want you to...
Worry, my parents said together, rolling their eyes at each other.
What? Is that so wrong? I demanded. Isn't part of being a family trying to protect each other?
Part of being a family is trusting each other to handle the tough stuff, Mom said, clearly not happy with me.
So I've heard, I said dryly.
I pulled my shoes off and blanched at the smell. I was going to need 6 showers before showing up at the wedding.
And if you want to have a real relationship with that handsome Jonah Bodine, you're going to have to figure that out. Isn't that right, James?
Do you think Scarlett would have a lead on any fixer-uppers in Bootleg? Dad mused, having tuned out the meat of the conversation.
What? Why? Mom asked.
If both our kids end up here, we should probably have a home base. We already have a pig and a puppy for grandchildren.
It is a nice town, Mom agreed. And just like that, Bootleg Springs reeled in a fresh catch. We arrived back in Bootleg a scant hour before the wedding. I needed to fly through a shower in makeup and hair if I was going to make it before Cassidy walked down the aisle. Dad pulled up in front of the little yellow house and turned off the car.
Are you guys coming in?
I asked, already peeling my skin off the car seat and heading for the front porch.
Bowie and Cassidy invited us to the wedding. Where your ride?
Dad called. I was reaching for the screen door to yank it open when I noticed the roll of paper between the doors.
What's that?
A love note from Jonah? Mom asked. He's a keeper, Shelby.
My parents walked past me into the house and immediately went into grandparent mode, releasing Billy Ray from his crate and showering him with treats and kisses. It was such a domestic scene. My parents making themselves at home in my house, playing with my dog. But none of that registered. Slowly, I unrolled the paper, already knowing what I'd find. It was a crude charcoal sketch of a woman with thick bangs and wide eyes. She had an upturned nose and a scar on her chest. She was naked.
"How did you find me?" I whispered.
Billy Ray jumped on me in sweet puppy delight, and I scooped him up. I looked over my shoulder and took my time studying every inch of the woods and yard. Was he out there now? Did he expect me to be as helpless as I'd been the last time? He was going to be disappointed.
"Shelby," Mom called, "if you don't get in the shower now, we're going to be late."
51. Jonah. If Bowie's smile got any bigger, his face was going to split open. I'd never seen a man happier or more ready to march down the aisle. "Did you see her? How does she look?" he asked me for the third time. My brother was referring to his bride. "Yes, I saw Cassidy," I said again. I picked up the beer that Bowie kept putting down and handed it back to him. He needed something to do with his hands. "She looks... Wait, don't tell me. I want to be surprised. Leah May made her dress," he said, imparting the information he'd mentioned at least 16 times since I'd shown up. Jameson growled at his tie in the mirror in the sheriff's den. Cassidy and the girls had commandeered the entire second floor of the Tucker household. The guests had taken over the backyard. Gibson adjusted his suspenders, frowning. There was a knock at the door.
"Are you boys decent?"
My mom poked her head in the door. She was pretty as a spring day, as the town elders would say, in a blue and white dress that nipped in at the waist and fell away into a full skirt. Her short blonde cap of hair was accentuated with a sparkly headband.
"Hey, Jenny,"
Bowie greeted her with the full wattage of his smile.
"Oh, my,"
she said, stepping inside. She gave my arm a squeeze before turning her attention to Bowie.
"You look almost as excited as your bride."
She brushed a hand over his lapels. "I can't believe it's finally happening," he said softly.
"Are you nervous?"
Mom asked him. He shook his head emphatically, then said,
"Yes."
She laughed.
"Okay, then here's some advice. When the processional music starts, close your eyes and count to 5. When you open them, you'll be looking right at your beautiful bride. You want to remember every step she takes to you. You want to remember the second her hand touches yours and that first smile she gives you. Because the rest of the night is going to be a whirlwind, but you want to remember those moments for the rest of your life." Well, hell, I had no idea my mom was such a romantic. It made my throat tickle. Bowie nodded and swallowed hard.
"Thanks for being here, Jenny. I know you're Jonah's mama and all, but I kind of feel like you belong to all of us." My mom's eyes went damp.
"I'm honored to be here with all of you boys," she whispered.
There was a lot of throat clearing and a few covert swipes at eyes with sleeves.
"Ah, Jameson, sweetheart, let me at that tie,"
Mom demanded, righting the damage he was doing. She gave us all the once-over, helping Gibson into his jacket, tucking my boutonniere into place, giving Bowie an extra squeeze. The music outside changed. Checking her watch, she peeked out into the backyard.
"Well, boys, I think this is your big moment. Are you ready to walk out there and get your brother married?"
"Yes, ma'am," we answered.
"Good. Then get out there and have the best time,"
she said, shooing us toward the door. Bowie paused in the doorway.
You'll sit up front, won't you? He asked her. You and Jimmy Bob, you can sit across the aisle from the Tuckers.
She pressed her lips together.
I'd be honored, she whispered.
We exited the den, and I dropped a kiss on the top of her head. Thanks for being here, Mom.
I love you, Jonah Bodine.
She was the second woman to tell me that today. And it was the first woman I was thinking of when I took my place next to Jameson to the right of the trellis Gibbs had finished in a burst of energy. Mayor Augie Hornsblatt took his role as officiant seriously. He was wearing a shirt and tie under his best overalls. Misty Lynn, the man-eating Venus flytrap, was dateless in the front row with her father and my mother. The way she was eyeing Gibson made me think there might be trouble later. But I didn't have time to worry about Misty Lynn and whatever scene she'd undoubtedly cause. I was too busy looking at Shelby. I'd spotted her immediately a few rows back on the aisle next to her parents. Her thick bangs framed those watchful hazel eyes. The rest of her dark hair was pulled back in a low bun behind her ear. She was wearing a sunshine yellow dress and a smile that brightened my entire world. Shelby gave me a little finger wiggle, and I returned it. It was a good day. Not only was my brother tying the knot, but Shelby Thompson told me she was in love with me. And tonight, I'd tell her that the feeling was mutual, that I didn't want this summer to come to an end.
Here come the girls, Jameson hissed at me. Reluctantly, I dragged my eyes away from my girl.
Leah May, June, and Scarlet, eschewing the traditional aisle, saunter strutted down the grassy expanse in blue. Scarlet blew Devlin a kiss when she passed him, and you'd have to be blind to miss the pride and love that beamed off him. My sister was loved, my brother was getting married, and I was starting my own future. June, more dignified than the rest, gave GT a polite nod and the slightest of smiles as she passed him. GT looked like he wanted to jump up from his seat next to his mother and squeeze her tight. I had a feeling there was another engagement in the works there. Leah May, instead of taking her place next to Scarlet, bebopped over to the man's side of the aisle and planted a kiss on Jameson that had the assembled guests cheering.
Oh, what the heck,
she said. She planted a kiss on me, then Gibson, and finally a resounding smack on the lips for Bowie. Love was a physical presence here. I'd been to weddings before. I'd watched brides and grooms share their vows over the murmured complaints of guests who really didn't want to spend their day celebrating. But today was different. Every single person in attendance was here because they loved Bowie and Cassidy and wanted to be here, to celebrate with them, to shed tears with them, to be there on the most special day of their lives. The music changed, and I chanced a glance at my brother. Bowie's eyes were squeezed closed. Cassidy appeared on the arm of Sheriff Tucker, a vision in blush and lace. She floated rather than walked to the head of the aisle, and when she arrived, when she paused to take in the moment, Bowie opened his eyes. The moment was so powerful, so moving, I heard an intake of breath rise up from the chairs, followed immediately by sniffles. Mayor Hornsblatt blew his nose noisily into a handkerchief. When Bowie bent at the waist to catch his breath, I found Shelby again in the audience, beaming through tears. I remembered back to when I thought maybe there was a possibility that I could see myself as the faceless groom in Renee's Pinterest vision. This was different. This was real. I wasn't some guy trying to fit myself into someone else's ideal. I was a man in love with a woman, and I wanted what Bowie and Cassidy had.
what Scarlett and Devlin found, what Leah May and Jameson discovered, what George and June built. And I wanted it all with Shelby. Sheriff Tucker nudged his daughter forward, and they started down the aisle. Bowie was so excited he met them at the front row. The sheriff, with glistening eyes, let go of his daughter long enough to hug Bowie hard.
"Proud of you, son," he whispered.
They were words we all needed so desperately to hear. Jameson cleared his throat next to me. Gibbs was swiping at the corner of his eye with his jacket sleeve. I looked for Shelby again. She was watching me. "I love you," she mouthed.
52. Shelby. The wedding was picture perfect. There wasn't a dry eye in the backyard when Cassidy and Bowie pledged their love to each other. And it wasn't just because the caterer had opened the bar early. No, Bootleg Springs was as enamored with the happy couple as they were with each other. After the vows were spoken, the toasts made, and dinner served, I finally got a slow dance with Jonah.
"You look beautiful, Shelby," he told me as we swayed under strings of lights.
I was barefoot in the grass in the arms of the man I loved under a starry summer sky. "You look pretty great yourself," I said, plucking at his collar. He'd removed the tie, shed the jacket, and rolled up his sleeves after the pictures were taken, and looked even more delicious now with his suspenders showing than he had in the suit jacket.
"How you feeling?"
he asked, swaying us in a slow tick-tock that made it feel like time was standing still. "I feel magical," I decided. That was the perfect word for what I felt.
"You're not too sore?"
he pressed, pausing to dip me backward in a slow-motion arc. The lights and stars above us blurred in happy confusion. I grinned as he pulled me back to standing, his arms banding around me. "I will be tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day."
"I'm so proud of you," Jonah said, leaning in to rest his lips on the top of my head.
I was really glad I'd taken a second pass with the shampoo in the shower. "I'm pretty proud of me, too."
"How did your parents take the hiding a diagnosis from them news?"
he asked. I glanced over to where my parents were feeding each other cake. "Better than I expected, though they still got in a parting guilt trip." I wanted to tell him about the sketch, about what it meant, but the moment was so perfect, I selfishly held on to it. "Speaking of parents," I said, nodding over Jonah's shoulder. He turned us and spotted his mother dancing with Bowie.
"Everybody needs a mom," I whispered.
Jenny was laughing as Bowie spun her away from him, and then Gibson captured her other hand and took over the dance.
"This is what she always wanted," Jonah confessed. "A big, complicated family."
"It doesn't get much bigger or more complicated than the Bodines," I teased.
Excuse me, you two."
Jimmy Bob Prosser looked like his necktie was choking him. He was a big man with broad shoulders and work-roughened hands. He was also sweating profusely.
"Hi, Jimmy Bob,"
Jonah said amiably, and I loved him just a little more for it.
"Hi,"
Jimmy Bob said. His Adam's apple worked in his throat.
"I just wanted to, tell you, well, reassure you that..."
He got that look that people got when the words they wanted to say up and evaporated right out of their head. "Jimmy Bob, would you like a glass of water?" I offered.
"Oh, no thank you, Shelby. I'm just trying to work up the nerve to tell Jonah here how much I like his mama, and how I have nothing but honorable intentions toward her,"
he croaked. Love was in the air. "That's good to hear, Jimmy Bob," Jonah said, giving the man a pat on the shoulder.
"She's one of a kind," the man continued. "And she and I have been talking some."
Judging from the flush on his face and neck, they'd been doing a lot more than just talking.
Anyway, your mom is real special, and I was hoping...
Hello. The woman in question floated into our little circle, a glass of champagne in hand and a lovely smile on her face. She pressed a kiss to Jonah's cheek, then turned and did the same to Jimmy Bob. Jimmy Bob beamed at her brighter than the moon above.
Jenny, darling, I was just telling Jonah and Shelby here how much I enjoy your company.
Did you also tell them that I'm considering moving to Bootleg Springs? She asked brightly. Jonah stiffened in surprise next to me.
Are you serious?
Jenny grinned. Only if you don't mind.
Mind?
Jonah laughed. He released me with a parting squeeze and picked his mother up in a bear hug.
Are you nuts? Are you sure?
He set her down to see her face. Clarabelle and her husband are thinking about retiring in a few years. They want someone they can trust managing Moonshine Diner. She shot a look at Jimmy Bob. And I happen to like the company here.
Jimmy Bob looked like he'd just won chicken shit bingo and the state lottery on the same night.
What Jenny didn't voice, what I wasn't about to bring up since I was all about not ruining the moment, was the fact that she was probably also going to need to be available to a lot of questions from investigators. Callie Kendall was alive and out there somewhere, and someone was determined to make sure she stayed dead. A shiver worked its way up my spine, and I felt as if there were eyes on me. I thought of the sketch folded up in my clutch, the shadow it represented. As if sensing the chill, Jonah slipped his arm around my waist, drawing me into his side. I spotted my brother dancing forehead to forehead with June on the other side of the yard. Bootleg Springs had cast its spell on all of us, drawing us in and making us feel like we belonged. I only needed to know if there was a place here for me with Jonah.
I'm happy for you, Mom, he said gruffly.
And I'm happy for you, son, Jenny said with a knowing tilt of her head in my direction.
On that note, I'm going to whisk my girlfriend away to a dark corner of the yard for some necking, Jonah announced.
True to his word, he set a course and led me through the throng of jubilant celebrators. We were stopped a dozen times by friends and family. Nadine Tucker's gardening shed, a charming little building tucked away behind the garage, appeared to be our destination. Jonah paused in front of the door.
About what you told me earlier, he began.
My pulse picked up. Refresh my memory? I said coyly, tapping my chin with a finger. I imagined nerd girls everywhere standing up and cheering.
You said you loved me,
he said, his voice whisper soft and deep as the night that surrounded us here in this quiet little corner. Oh, that.
I don't want you to leave at the end of the summer, he said. I don't want to find a good home for Billy Ray. I want to keep him. And he and I will follow you wherever you go.
He was warming up for the big finish, and as much as I wanted to hear those words, as much as my soul was vibrating with the need to hear them, I had a few loose ends to tie off first. What about your mom? You can't leave Bootleg Springs if she's moving here. You have family here, a lot of family.
And now that I know where they live, I can visit whenever it's convenient. I love this town and I love my family, but Shelby.
He paused and tilted my chin up so I was looking in those oh-so-tender green eyes.
I'd rather be next to you.
Jonah, I sighed, savoring his name.
Don't tell me you've changed your mind since this afternoon, he teased.
I shook my head. You'd follow me?
Wherever you go,
he said, tucking a strand of hair behind my ear. Soft, intimate touches that were untying every knot in my stomach.
I can work anywhere. I can visit my family anytime. But I want a hell of a lot more than a fling with you, Shelby.
Say it, say it, say it, the 15-year-old nerd in me chanted. Why is that? I asked, dancing my fingers under his suspenders.
I think it has something to do with the fact that I'm head over heels in love with you. Frankly, I'm surprised a smart girl like you didn't figure it all out weeks ago.
I poked him in the chest. I've been a little busy.
How's your schedule looking now?
He asked, leaning in and down, down, down. Wide open, I whispered. His lips were a breath away from mine, but I stopped him. Jonah, wait. He paused where he was.
What? Are you okay?
His breath was hot on my skin, and I could feel the heat of his body through his shirt. I want to stay here, in Bootleg. Morgantown isn't too far, and there are a handful of universities within 100 miles. I might be able to work from home part-time like June, or I'll just get good at long commutes, but my point is, I want to be here, with you, and my brother, and June, and everyone else, and... I was sure there were more words, and definitely a few not-so-pretty ones. I had to tell him about the sketch, and we had to talk to Sheriff Tucker sooner rather than later. But for right this second, I was just going to kiss the hell out of Jonah Bodine on a beautiful, hot summer night. His mouth closed over mine, tongue and teeth taking charge, and I welcomed it. He was who I wanted for my lifetime. We fit. We belonged.
Shelby, honey, how much do you like that dress?
He asked. Not as much as I'd like your hands on me, I told him. 53. Shelby. The garden shed had the metallic tang of potting soil in the musky air. Dimly, I could make out shelves along one wall stocked with terracotta pots and the like. The opposite wall was a puzzle of tools and gardening implements, and on the back wall there was a long, skinny workbench. Jonah carried me to it, settled me on it, and drew me to the edge. He cupped my face in one hand, and I felt rather than saw him stare into me.
My girl, he breathed.
I spread my knees wide and used my heels to drag him against me. The bulge behind his zipper ground into me. I could feel the metal through the thin cotton of my thong. The noise he made was primal. We were eye to eye as he flexed his erection against my opening. I gripped the edge of the workbench, and the straps of my dress slid down my arms, hanging precariously. The scoop neck deepened to indecent. Jonah was bucking against me now, slowly, rhythmically, as if he were waiting for the dress to give up its battle against gravity. Obliging him, I curved my shoulders forward and was rewarded with a gasp that I felt on my hard, furled nipples. He bent and dipped his tongue into the neckline of the dress where one areola peeked through. The rough flat of his tongue drove me wild. While he licked and sucked, I went to work on his belt and pants. I didn't want him slow and sweet tonight. I wanted him wild with his own need, desperate to have me. I used my hands and my heels to shove his pants down just enough. He sprang free, bobbing against my swollen clit, and it was my turn to gasp. Ignoring the fact that I was fisting the root of his cock, Jonah moved to lick over my other nipple. The dress was bunched around my waist from the top and bottom like a yellow tutu. My breasts were bared to his mouth while his hands slid between my legs. He hooked a finger under the thong over the growing wet spot and then, with unfair patience, dragged the material back and forth over my cleft.
"I'm going to want you in this dress again and again,"
he growled. He raked his teeth over my nipple and I shivered.
"I want you bent over a table, your skirts pushed up, and your sweet ass on display, just waiting for me to touch you."
He slid the thong to the side and skated the tip of one finger through my seam. I was balanced on the edge of the table and had nowhere to go. Forward would have me falling, back would take me away from the cock I was trying to tempt with busy fingers. I stroked up to the top, my thumb dancing over the slit there.
"I'll want you to wear this to nice parties so I can lure you out into the woods and finger fuck you against a tree.
Jonah pumped into my hand and then slid two fingers into me. I gripped his cock tighter. He groaned, nuzzling his cheek against my breasts before bringing his mouth to mine. The kiss, that glorious, filthy kiss, mimicked what we were doing to each other. Short, sharp thrusts of tongue, finger, cock. I ached for more, even as I felt my inner muscles dance. I could come on his fingers, but I wanted all of him. I wanted to seal this night and our promises the right way. "Take me here, Jonah," I begged. I brought my heels to the edge of the table, opening my legs as wide as they could go.
"Fuck, Shelby, who could say no to you?"
He brought his forehead to mine, nipped at my lower lip, still pumping himself into my hand, still fucking me with his fingers. Our breath mingled in the dark. "Please, Jonah," I breathed.
"I don't want to hurt you," he whispered. "Your body's been through a lot today, and I'm worked up enough that I don't know if I can be gentle."
"That's exactly what I want. Don't be gentle with me. Trust me to take it, to handle it." He growled low, fighting with his body's wants and his need to be careful with me. "Show me you trust me," I demanded. I angled the head of his cock so it brushed between my wet, wet folds on his next thrust. I saw the tightening of his jaw. He grabbed me by the back of the neck with one hand.
"I'm going to be so pissed at you if you let me hurt you."
"We'll both deal with it," I promised, nudging my hips forward so he was notched in place. "Take me. Show me." Without warning, he drove into me, impaling me on the table. And then he was dragging his cock in and out of my slick flesh, owning me, claiming me. He held me by the neck, keeping our foreheads pressed tight as he fucked into me.
"Stay quiet," he warned. "There are about 50 people right outside this door who could hear you scream when you come on my cock, Shelby."
I sobbed out a response, clinging to his shoulders as he used my body. It felt so decadent, like my body and I were no longer strangers, like Jonah had taught me how to find the pleasure my body could afford.
"Wider, baby,"
he grunted when my knees buckled, closing on his hips. What a tableau we made, fully clothed and rutting into each other, gasping for breath, begging for the undefined more. My breasts bounced as his thrusts grew more aggressive. I could name and describe the dozens of physiological reactions that were happening in our bodies right this second, but I couldn't for the life of me ascribe what I felt for this man to mere science. It was elemental and magic. It was exotic and home. My neck stung where his grip tightened, and I felt the first shimmers of what we were both chasing.
"Shelby," he bit out.
That impatience, that need to satisfy me, even though his own biological drive was leading the charge. It did me in. Jonah loved me. He would always want to take care of me, and I did the same for him. With his free hand, he found my exposed flesh, dancing pads of eager fingers over that tight bundle of nerves.